Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Balkan around, one man coming towards the net, shoots it, and Grubauer can't stop it. It's in the net. The Penguins get the lead right back. Evgeny Malkin has the hat trick, and the Penguins lead 6-5. And you would have to be here to believe it.
Well, they won 8-7 last night in overtime as Connor Sheary knocked in the game-winning goal in overtime as he and Sidney Crosby attacked the net. And what a game that was last night. It was actually a lot of fun.
I love the 3-on-3 in overtime. That is fun to see.
Oh, the 3-on-3. That actually started in the AHL, and they liked it so much in the AHL, they brought it there. Like, they got tired of like doing shootouts. It's like 5 minutes overtime to go to a shootout. 3-on-3, wide open ice. Good. It's fun. All right, Neil Coulong joins us now to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, USA Today. Neil, welcome back. Great to have you with us. And what are the differences we're seeing today in Bud Dupree that maybe we didn't see a few months ago?
I think he's getting sharper. To me, it looks like he's saving some motion, which is to say he doesn't take like 4 extra wasted steps off the line the way that he did. We've seen him explode off the line in the past. It's truly something to behold because the guy is just an incredible athlete, but really raw. He doesn't have a real counter move yet to a block. It's taken him a bit longer to get off blocks than what you would probably like, but he's piecing it together. You definitely see a level of improvement from him from where he started midway through this season due to the injury that he had to now. And you know, as we saw it on Sunday night, he's starting to become an impact player, and it couldn't come at the more perfect time for the Steelers.
Because I think he is a critical guy coming up on Sunday night, because Brady obviously is great, but even Brady, when he's pressured, is not the same. That's why I just feel that off the edge, he's huge for them on Sunday night. They need him.
Yeah, he's absolutely going to be, because I think what you're going to see a lot of is a lot of A-gap pressure the Steelers are going to bring up the middle. Houston had a good amount of success with that. It really looked like the interior of the Patriots' offensive line struggled to see it. That's something they'll work on, but really what that means in essence, too, is that Dupree is going to see a lot of single blocking, a lot of chips from running backs. And that gives him the ability, or if not the opportunity, to make an impact on the game. He's going to have to step up and make plays. I agree with you. I think he might be the most important cog to this game because, I think any NFL quarterback is going to be better from a clean pocket than a hurried one. But more than anything, the Steelers are going to have to force the Patriots' hand offensively. They're going to have to make Brady go off schedule, because when he gets on, especially against the Steelers, we've seen him completely destroy whoever it is that the Steelers have thrown out there. And this dates back a lot of years. You know, this goes back to Dick LeBeau. It's every player that's been out there probably the last 6-7 years has gotten whipped by Brady. So it's a very fine line. It's obviously not an easy thing to do. It's a big part of the reason why the Patriots are as good as they are. So if the Steelers have any trick up their sleeve or anything else that they can do to try to confuse him, they're going to have to find that this week in practice.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. When you look at the Steeler offensive line, what has the athleticism, especially of the interior guys, meant? I mean, I'm talking particularly DeCastro and obviously Pouncey at center.
What's really been interesting with the Steelers' running game is that the outside zone that they used to run is really kind of what they were aiming to do. They brought in a load of athleticism particularly in the interior, just for that. You have some beef with Foster, but for the most part, DeCastro and Pouncey are two of the better athletes at their position. You want to think that they're going to get outside. They're going to get those guys on the move and create, you know, the moving zone screen. But more than anything, I think what their scheme resembles more now is a little bit more power. They're not really moving guys or moving their feet a huge amount. What they're doing is really just kind of trying to keep them in place and let the defender commit to something and have Bell react to that. It's a very unique kind of style, and it's one that it's produced a pretty good amount of success for the Steelers during their winning streak. And overall, I think that the biggest thing for me, and I don't have the number in front of me, but I don't know how many, if any, zero or negative carries Bell has had in the last several weeks.
Right.
He's getting the ball, and he's back there by himself. And, you know, obviously it's easy to praise his patience, as you know, you should to a degree, but the offensive line is not letting anybody in. There's nobody that's disrupting his ability to be patient. He's not being forced. So because of that, the Steelers are able to take the ground game to the opposing defense. The defense doesn't really have anything to do but react. And if you're in that tight of space with 300-pound guys, the 210-pound Le'Veon Bell is able to get past them. And because of that, he's cracking off, you know, 5-6 yards a pop. And the success the Steelers have had on offense has come almost entirely through him. So the Patriots can certainly expect more of that. And, you know, Belichick being, in my opinion anyway, the best one-game defensive coach in NFL history, he's got a real challenge. That's going to be difficult for them to stop. And they're really not going to want a ground-controlled football game against the Steelers. They're going to have to try to keep it up tempo and force the Steelers into as many passing mistakes as they can. They don't want Bell to beat them.
See, and that's when I look at the Cowboys' offensive line. Outstanding straight-ahead blockers. Really good pass protectors. But if you pull them out into space, it's a problem. The Steelers do all three, because they pull their guys out into space. That just is an added dimension the Patriots have to be worried about, that every once in a while they will do that.
Yeah, it's really become the signature of the Steelers now. I don't think enough has really been said about that. It's usually put on Bell, as you imagine that it would, but the entire offense is schemed around the running game now. They're running a lot more than they have at any point, probably in even the Tomlin era, back when Willie Parker was getting the ball 25-plus times a game. I don't think as much of a team's offense is run through the ground the way the Steelers are doing now. That's what makes them such a unique challenge for the Patriots, and if they get past them, whoever they play in the Super Bowl. They're really a fundamentally sound running team. Ben Roethlisberger, of course, is still going to get you know, the respect that he deserves as far as his ability, but you have to be terrified about the Steelers' running game right now more than anything. They can take over a game, and we haven't even seen them you know, ripping off long chunks of yards and a dominant performance in the last couple of weeks. Outstanding ones for sure, but it's really just kind of been centered around the ground game. If they're able to get every component of their offense together and have it spearheaded by the ground, they can score 30-plus points on anybody. So it's really a difficult assignment for the Patriots this week to figure out how they're going to slow all that down.
What have you thought about the Steelers' red zone offense?
On one hand, I would say the Chiefs game, I wouldn't call it an anomaly. I would just say it's more like, well, that's a good defensive team. You know, the Steelers got yards on them. They moved on them when space got tight. They kind of exposed a little bit the lack of legit receiving size that they have. They're not performing as well without a lot of the difference makers that they have. They've lost a lot of receivers. Ladarius Green's missed the last couple games. He was somebody I think they at least hoped to get out there to kind of make an impact in the red zone at some point this season. Doesn't seem like that's going to continue for him. But overall, you have to be a little bit frustrated about it, largely because it happened in week 15 as well, or 14, whatever it is they played Cincinnati. They had the same game. Both of those they could have lost if they didn't have a kicker who hit 13-13, which is just otherworldly for two games. You have to be happy with that regard. But against the Chiefs, I think they blew a legit scoring opportunity. Roethlisberger audibling out of what probably should have been a run. I'm not sure exactly what he saw on that, but a bad decision by him. They were right at the doorstep. If they score a touchdown in that game, in that spot, you're not overall, you know, really worried about the red zone production, considering how good Kansas City is. But it could be a lot better as well. They're not finding the playmakers in a short short field the way that they're going to need to. That'll be a point of emphasis this week for sure.
What have your thoughts been on Jesse James' development?
Oh, I think he's come along pretty well, you know, for what they're asking him to do now. And I think they signed Ladarius Green not to necessarily be the three-down tight end, but to give them an experienced elite-level athlete to get down the seam. I think it, overall, what they really wanted from James was more of that well-rounded, solid contributing tight end. You watch this game, the amount of targets that James got right away was clearly the reaction that Roethlisberger had to the fact the Chiefs really did a lot to take Bell as the receiver out of the game, and they did a great job. But what did he finish with, like four catches for negative 2 yards or
right.
something like that?
Right.
They didn't give him anything, and James outproduced the first-team All-Pro tight end, Travis Kelce, and James didn't drop a pass or shove a cornerback for a 50-yard penalty either. So
right.
that in and of itself you have to be happy with. I think you really like that kind of production from a fifth-round pick a year ago. So definitely a benefit to them. I don't think they're done kind of moving things around with the position come the offseason. I don't think he's going to be a 95% snap guy for them, but he definitely can be utilized in several different roles right now for him.
Besides irrelevant locker room videos, what do you think the keys are on Sunday?
Really, for the Steelers, it's such an interesting thing because you have to worry about the versatility that the Patriots bring on defense. Now, one big thing, you look at them as the top scoring defense of the NFL. That's a very slanted statistic considering this isn't even an exaggeration. The three best quarterbacks that the Patriots saw this year, Russell Wilson, which I'll give you that, Carson Palmer, not a real good year for him.
That's right.
And probably Joe Flacco or Tyrod Taylor. After that, Matt Moore of the Dolphins, they saw nobody. I mean, they really had an easy schedule, as it turns out. And advanced statistics suggest
really good
while
point.
their defense has a lot of the traditional measurements that you would look at, and certainly they earned that. I'm not trying to dismiss their accomplishments. They didn't really play a whole lot of good teams. This is clearly the best offense that they've faced. So for Pittsburgh, I think it's a matter of execution. They're going to have to test this unit to find out how good they really are. This is a team that gave up, I forget how many total, to Houston and Brock Osweiler, who he put up probably the worst playoff performance we've seen this side of poor Connor Cook in the wild card round
right.
and Brian Hoyer last year.
Right.
A horrendous game from Osweiler. He really just had a brutal season overall, and they beat him twice. So it just goes to show. I don't know how much the Patriots have been tested. So with that, I think the Steelers should feel confident with their ability to give a team that hasn't seen anything quite like them a real run for their money. And I think a lot of that really is going to have to be their ability to establish the run. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if Belichick sells out, puts nine guys in the box the entire game, and basically says, Ben, I dare you in single coverage, get the ball to Antonio Brown. You're going to need five or six, like 30-plus yard passes to beat us because we're going to run you out of the building on the offensive side. I see a high-scoring game. It's really going to come down to the quarterbacks and for the Steelers, Ben's ability to maintain possession. And that's been something of an issue for him. So it'll be interesting, that's for sure.
I think it's going to be a 120-point weekend between the two games. I think when it's all said and done, there'll be over 120 points between the four teams. So, hey, Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Kulong joining us. Neil does a lot of work for USA Today. Great to have him with us today. He makes a really good point. Give me the names of the major league big-time quarterbacks the Patriots have faced this year. Who? Russell Wilson, obviously. They lost that game. But Tyrod Taylor twice? Ryan Tannehill, Matt Moore? Ryan Fitzpatrick twice? A little bit of Bryce Petty? There's six of their games. Brock Osweiler twice? We're up to eight now. Throwing Wilson, that's nine. Who else did they face this year? Landry Jones? Okay, now we're at 10. Because remember, Ben didn't play that game, right? Landry Jones played.
That's correct.
The Browns, obviously. So that's an automatic. So now we're up to 12 games out of 17. Andy Dalton and Flacco, right? And then, and
yeah, the Browns was Tom Brady's first game back. So that would have been, what, week six, I think, yeah.
And then they faced, what, Carson Palmer, who didn't have a good year. The 49ers, with Colin Kaepernick, awful. And the Rams, awful. Okay? They played 17 games this year. They faced, I'll give Andy Dalton some credit, all right, three legitimate quarterbacks in 17 games. Like, that are, I mean, I'm talking major league quarterbacks. If you're in the league, you're legitimate. They faced three major league quarterbacks the entire season. Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton, and Russell Wilson. Think about that. The Patriots had an exponentially easier schedule than maybe people realize. I mean, think about the quarterbacks they face. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Bryce Petty. Matt Moore, Ryan Tannehill. Tyrod Taylor twice. Brock Osweiler twice. Carson Palmer. Case Keenum. Colin Kaepernick. I don't know if it's McCown or it doesn't really matter who started for the Browns.
Trevor Siemian, Denver.
Trevor Siemian at Denver? I mean, one after another. I mean, Landry Jones, even when they play the Steelers, they didn't face Ben, they face Landry Jones. I don't know. It's a lot easier schedule than people realize when you put it in that context, isn't it? A lot easier. All right. We will come back with more in a moment. Final half hour will include Jay Sorge from WTMJ in Milwaukee to talk about the Packers. Wayne Larrabee tomorrow. Eli Gold on Friday. The voice of Alabama football and one of the absolutely great guys out there. I've run into Eli for football and in basketball over the years. My respect for him is very, very high. Come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors.
When you're looking for a new Ford vehicle in Central PA, there's only one dealer with four city blocks of new Fords. It's Sunbury Motors Ford. SMC is where you want to be with over 90 new F-150s priced from just $24,824. See for yourself why Sunbury Motors has sold over 40,000 trucks. Sunbury Motors Ford has over 70 new Ford SUVs in stock with 2017 Ford Escapes on sale from only $19,880. SMC has 45 new Ford cars with Ford Fiestas starting as low as $13,975. Plus, financing as low as 0% for up to 72 months on select models. You deserve to deal with the best. Sunbury Motors Ford. SMC is the dealer voted best in the Valley Reader's Choice for best car dealership,
best body shop,
and best quick service. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. SMC, satisfying more customers since 1915.
Penn State men's ice hockey team ranked number one in the country. They've got Ohio State this weekend at home. Number one in the nation. Have fun with it. Embrace it.
I'm seeing more and more in my Facebook friends there. Hey, you have a pair of tickets for some Penn State hockey?
Yeah.
Send me a message.
They sold out.
That's a great predicament to be in.
Yep, they're sold out. Been sold out, I think, all but three times since they've been in that building. Amazing. You've got Penn State in wrestling at Iowa Friday night. Let's see what else we got here. Penn State basketball with Indiana tomorrow. And then they go to Purdue on Saturday.
my bad. I should have brought this up yesterday, but Penn State fencing over the weekend, defeating number one Columbia.
Won all of them, as a matter of fact.
That was terrific. Saw a little video of that, of the final individual match. That was really cool.
Yeah, no, and the entire group is getting together at St. John's, I think, in 2 weeks anyway. But I talked with Wes Klein, the fencing coach at Penn State, and he feels he has a really good team now, but most of those individuals are freshmen, sophomores, juniors. They don't have a lot of seniors. He feels the time they can really make a run is next year. But that was a great win. They beat Columbia 14-13 on Sunday, which is a great win. Columbia is the defending national champion and ranked number one in the country in fencing.
Similarities to that team with the football team in terms of youth. How about that?
Well, you've got that across campus here. See the basketball team? You want to know how many guys are losing off that team?
I will say zero.
That's right. Penn State men's basketball does not have a single senior on the team. In terms of eligibility, Peyton Banks and Julia Moore are both academically seniors. Yeah, that's happening. I mean, look at the wrestling team. Hey, all the key guys all have eligibility left. Suddenly, Penn State has become really, really good at the same time while being really, really young in a lot of sports. Kind of a cool thing, huh? I mean, last I checked, the running back here is a sophomore.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Yesterday, I believe we did name Antonio Brown the sports bozo, correct? Thought we did.
Yes.
Yeah, to his credit, he earned it. Well done. Today we'll go with the big guy, Roger Goodell. Something fascinating about Atlanta Falcons football that makes you go every week? Something about the New England Patriots in Gillette Stadium that makes you not go? He has not set foot in that stadium since the Deflategate thing. You know that? It's the National Football League. They don't have a private plane. He can fly him from one game to the other. Really? Can't do it? You know what you're discovering about the NFL? Which is really interesting? You know what really appears to be unimportant to them? The fans. You're about to have, if the Raiders go to Las Vegas, three teams move in a span of 12 months. Think about that. I think the Raiders have until April, so it'd be three teams in 14 months. This is the $13 billion a year National Football League. When they get into meetings, from what I understand, they never talk about the game. They always talk about what you can sell, seat licenses, cabanas. Luxury suites, things that they never talk about the game, from what I understand. Last time I checked, the game was the game. Really makes you wonder how much they think of the fans. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think they think too much of it. It's all about how they can get more out of you, but they don't think about what you need. Just an opinion. But they certainly do give that big business aspect to it, don't they? All right. Jay Sorge joins us. WTMJ in Milwaukee covers the Packers extensively, especially in their pregame and postgame shows. Jay, welcome. What was the turning point, that moment in this season where you feel like the light went on for Green Bay?
I think what you saw was in the second half of their last loss, which was against Washington in a Monday night game, you saw the Packers offense really begin to click in ways that it hadn't done for about a good calendar year. And I think at that point, Aaron Rodgers had said, you know, we've got the mojo offensively back, and we're good enough with our offensive game that we can beat anybody, anywhere, anytime. And then came out the run the table comment. And it was then that all of a sudden the gong went off with this offense. And not just in terms of Rodgers' ridiculous productivity, but the capability to protect the football. They had just two turnovers since then. And when you protect the football, you're going to win in the National Football League a lot more. Plus, of course, well, that number 12 guy, as we all know.
Yeah, we've heard of him. Last year, that offensive line and Jordy Nelson all banged up. This year, the problems have been at the two corner spots. How have they been able to overcome all the injuries at corner to at least have enough defense to win?
That's the key phrase, enough defense to win, because it's not normally enough defense to win unless you have Aaron Rodgers producing like he does. But HaHa Clinton Dix has done yeoman's work at safety to assist. He's going to the Pro Bowl this year as a reward for it. Plus, the Packers' pass rush, is it the 85 Bears? No, but it's been enough with, again, a banged-up Nick Perry. You're seeing him play with one arm and another arm with a club, and yet he has been leading this team in sacks on a year where Clay Matthews hasn't necessarily been as productive as normal, because I think teams are focusing on him. Nick Perry's been able to clean up a bit, and Mike Daniels in the middle has been fantastic, particularly in the run-stuffing department, to put teams into third and long on enough drives where, again, they're not the top defense in the NFL by any manner of means, but they're able to do just enough to win some of these often close games.
And one of those close games, which was a loss, was a 32-31 loss to Atlanta. Take us back to that, Jay, as to on that day, because both teams are different now. But on that particular day, why was Atlanta 1 point better?
It was very simply who had the ball at the particular time when they needed to have it. What Atlanta has that Green Bay has lacked, with the exception of Ty Montgomery against Chicago, has been a powerful run game that could eat up clock. It was a pinball game in the first half, and then in the second stanza, Atlanta was able to just dominate the time of possession, grind out yards, particularly with Devontae Freeman keeping Aaron Rodgers off the field and making him have to score time after time every time they got the football. And then it was when Atlanta had the ball, and the fact that they were able to produce the game-winning score with 31 seconds left. And even when you have Aaron Rodgers on the field, it's not a guarantee that you're going to get in position to win the game with 31 seconds left. You're not going to necessarily have a repeat of what happened in Dallas on Sunday every time out. So that was just who scored last won.
You mentioned Ty Montgomery. You know, Eddie Lacy, you know, when in shape, is very good. I've always been a big Starks guy. I think he's been a great situational back over the years for the Packers. What's allowed Ty Montgomery to step into that spot? I know he always wanted to be a running back, but he was an all-purpose guy at Stanford. What's allowed him to step in and at least give some effectiveness in just enough running game?
His quickness in many situations. He's also bigger than what you'd expect. When you look at his frame, he is 220 pounds, but he's learned the position incredibly quickly, been dedicating himself to learn it so well over the past year. And I think really with him, it's been work ethic. I mean, he's a perfectionist. That's been his attitude. He's talked about, hey, I want to perfect every single thing that I do. Not that any of us don't, not that any of the Packers don't, but I think it's a much higher level with him than the norm. And I think just that pure dedication to success has played dividends for him this year. Has he been massively effective in every game? No. But again, with this offense, you just need the running game to be a change of pace.
All right. So when you look at they lose Nelson, and who knows if he plays this week or not, and if he does, how effective he'd be. But they did get Randall Cobb back. I mean, what did that mean to get him back in the lineup, just as another guy to go with Adams and everybody else?
You have to have those options, and Cobb is not going to be the speed-burning type of guy. I think really the only big play he's had in a very long time was the Hail Mary throw
right.
where he sent everybody deep against the New York Giants, and of course we all know what happened. Yes, Randall Cobb has been a great effect, and having him healthy has certainly helped, but especially it's been Jared Cook. You saw that final
yeah.
play against the Cowboys, but all season long, he's grown into a go-to guy for Aaron Rodgers. And if you are an Aaron Rodgers go-to guy, you're going to see the football when it counts the most.
But he's always used the tight end well. I mean, Rodgers of late, before that, obviously, Andrew Corliss, who was here at Penn State. He's always used the tight end well. It seems like Rodgers always seems to be aware of where the big guy is, and Cook looks like the step up he's been hoping for.
He has been the JerMichael Finley replacement yeah. that they've wanted.
Yeah.
Corliss has certainly been good at times when he was here. Richard Rodgers has stepped up in particular situations, but he hasn't been as consistent. Jared Cook is the threat that they've looked for to stretch defenses for a while. And you'll notice when they had Finley in 2010, 2011, Rodgers was at this astronomical level. He's there again. Cook has been a big reason why, especially in this eight-game stretch.
All right, I haven't asked you a single question about Rodgers yet, and there's a I want to save a couple for the end here. And when you watch him play, I've always told people I felt the best quarterbacks are the ones. I mean, like I'm talking about the top shelf quarterbacks are the ones that know where all 21 chess pieces on the field are besides themselves. Does that pretty much sum up where he is?
It's not just where the 21 chess pieces are. But it's where they happen to be at every single moment. I've never seen a quarterback who can control the in-between plays portion of time and use that as a true weapon the way Aaron Rodgers does. You've seen Peyton Manning be able to do that in terms of moving a team up quickly to the line of scrimmage and being able to quickly call a play. And I think Manning has that ability perhaps a little bit more than Rodgers. But what Rodgers is more aware of is where those chess pieces are in that in-between portion of time. He's watching everything happen in that period, and if a defense decides they want to substitute, bam, get to the line of scrimmage, get that free play. And he's taking advantage so often of that free play, just like he did with that touchdown in the first quarter against the Cowboys, time after time after time. And that's the kind of mastery of that portion of time unlike any quarterback I've ever seen.
Which then brings me to, you talk about the mastery of it and how he understands it. Last year was one of the few times I felt, Jay, in watching him, and this is all from afar, you're right there, that I felt like he was frustrated with what was going on around him. It seems like he's morphed back into the total calm, cool demeanor that they count on. Is that fair, or am I missing something?
I think he felt his share of frustrations with a combination of personnel, with major injury issues, not having Jordy Nelson, who was his security blanket for so long, not having the tight end, the capacity of a Jared Cook healthy for the grand portion of the year. He also, as you mentioned, had major offensive line issues last year. This offensive line has been healthy for the most part, and even when they've been banged up, they've been playing and being productive as perhaps the best pass-blocking line in the National Football League right now. There certainly, though, could be things internal to him that he's very private about, that he would never let be privy to the public, things perhaps that we don't even know about beyond what's been speculated.
Right.
But whatever that may happen to be, whatever that combination of factors is, he's got that solved. He's got his personnel around him. He's got his guys. And they're going out and doing incredible things.
But he's also got his movement. I mean, and that, I think, I can, in the playoffs, I mean, he would gut it out and move enough, but this year, that freedom, what is the return of complete freedom of movement meant to the Packer offense and how he creates?
Look at, you just used the word, how he creates, the capability to, within the pass pocket, buy enough time, thanks to the help of his fantastic offensive line, and let plays develop, and then have that capability to scramble out like he did in that final offensive play against Dallas and move on the run and still be in tune with his receivers. It's, again, unlike any quarterback that I can remember in I don't know how long. I don't know if you need to go back to John Elway as a good example, but where you're able to scramble for the purpose of throwing and have everything in sync. I mean, it's Houdini-like at some moments.
Finally, Jay, and we appreciate the time very, very much. Finally, what do you think of the swing factors on Sunday with Atlanta?
I very frankly think a lot is going to happen with health. Jordy Nelson, yes, they've been fantastic without him. He may provide a good 3 to 4 extra points. Maybe it's a touchdown on a particular drive that would otherwise be a field goal.
Okay.
There's health issues in the offensive line. Brian Bulaga gutted it out, for example. David Bakhtiari gutted it out against Dallas in the final minutes. And then, of course, the defensive health. Will they have enough health to be able to do anything to stop a Falcons passing game that is just as productive as this Green Bay Packers has? It hasn't necessarily got the attention because they haven't necessarily had the as much on what Aaron Rodgers has done playing spectacularly, but the productivity's been there all year long from Matt Ryan. So, health is the biggest factor for any team winning the National Football League, and there's a long injury list for Green Bay. How quickly they heal up to me, that could decide it.
Yeah. Jay, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your insight. You always do great work. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Steve. Thank you.
Jay Sorge, WTMJ in Milwaukee, does do a great job. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Great to have you with us. Looks like we're going to get Dottie Pepper on the show at Thursday.
Thursday at 3:35 for Dottie.
Good. Because I know Wakeman has a few questions about her game. All right, fine. I'll take care of that.
And also you and I were kicking around. I can hear her yelling from... I can hear her laughing from the newsroom. And also, you and I were kicking the idea around of getting former Penn State star Rich Ornberger, who's now doing radio talk shows in San Diego. We're going to try and get him on, talk about the Chargers, some NFL stuff, Penn State stuff. So that could be happening by the end of the week, too.
Good.
Yes.
Yep, sounds great. And we'll also have Eli Gold on before the week is over with.
It'll be a pretty big week. Love it.
Wayne Larrivee on the show. I guess what Eli had said many times, he said, "I'm not doing the show till the suit's out." I said, "Okay."
That's kind of weird because I was waiting to get back. I was waiting to hear back from the director of communications at the University of Alabama, probably double checking the email address. Wait, who's that?
I guess. Well, he says she's so IndyCar oriented. You know, and he said, because of the IndyCar thing, I don't really know if I want to go on that show. You know, I'm a NASCAR guy. So. We'll have some fun. We're not going to just talk about Alabama and about Saban. There are going to be a bunch of things I want to talk to him about. Because when like you said, I think you were surprised to find out what a hockey guy is.
I was floored. I couldn't believe it.
He is a hockey guy.
I mean, when you think of Alabama, I mean, let's face it, you know, hockey doesn't, for the most part, doesn't first thing come to mind.
Yeah, he grew up in Brooklyn. He's a Brooklyn guy. Yeah, I mean, you know. I've done a lot of games around Eli. I've done a couple football games around Eli. I've done some basketball games around Eli. He's just a really good guy. Really. So he is a pro's pro. And he'll be fun to talk to. And Wayne's a pro's pro. We'll get Larrivee on the show tomorrow. He is a pro's pro. I think you'll find with most of these people that have these jobs like that, that's the way they are. Ultra prepared.
Wayne's a great listen to on basketball. I try to catch him on Westwood One doing some of the March Madness games every year.
Who, Wayne?
Yes.
Oh, Wayne's just really good. Wayne's exciting to listen to. My goodness, we have all the look. When you've got Aaron Rodgers, people want to play back your big plays. Wayne's got a lot of playback. Well, we played back the Hail Mary to Cobb last week. And, of course, Rock McCarron's in the background laughing. Oh, Rock. So, Wayne did the Bears. I mean, Wayne left the Bears, you know, to take the Packers' job.
I did not know that.
Yes. He was already doing the Bears. When the Packer job came up, he actually left the Bears to go do the job. He's been doing it for so long, people forget that.
I was going to ask you how far back that was.
Yeah, it goes back. Goes back years and years. When he's been here in State College, he and I have gone out to lunch together here. Because he did the Big Ten for years. And was always a pros pro on every game he did. I mean, he just knew everything about both teams. And, you know, when you're talking about, it's one thing to do games when you're with a team. Because when you're with a team, you know your team. You're around them every game. You know the pros, the cons. You know pretty much what the substitution pattern is for the most part. Might be a little subtle change here and there. But your job is really to go out there and learn about the other team. And last night, I spent a couple of hours last night going through all things Indiana, which is next. I want to make sure I know about, you know, Thomas Bryant, about Blackman, what kind of season he's had, how well has he done lately, about the freshman that they have now playing for them, about Josh Newkirk, who had transferred in from Pitt. Yeah, your job is to get to know them. You know, I've already watched tape of Indiana. I'll get a better feel for Penn State tonight. I'll go to practice. But when you're in a position in a, quote, neutral position, where you've got to do a crash course on two teams, that's why you got to give them a little bit of credit when they do things like that, because it is not easy to sit there and do a crash course on two teams. Again, I have to learn about one team. I already know enough about my team. Now, let's face it, once the game starts, now, Penn State fans want to hear about their team in particular, so you have a head start.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.